Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome back to the studios of Radio Sai, Prashant Kiralayam, giving you a live broadcast every Thursday in the Asia stream of Radio Sai. As the proceedings in the Sai Kulwant Hall have ended just now, and as the devotees are silently lined up to have a close glimpse of our Lord, it's now time for us to get back to the studios to continue with the first segment of the evening session of this Thursday live. And this is Ganesh from Team Radio Sai inviting you all to yet another new episode of the Radio Sai Vedam Tutor. In today's class, we shall be having a special episode, a special talk by Dr. John J. Kinneman. This talk was delivered by Dr. John J. Kinneman on the first day of the two-day International Vedic Conference and the Multi-Faith Symposium that was held as a part of Bhagwan's 92nd birthday celebrations in the year 2017 on November 20th and 21st. Over to Dr. John J. Kinneman.
Professor John J. Kinneman, who is a senior scientist and associate professor at the University of Colorado, United States of America. He's an ecosystem scientist and past president of International Society for System Sciences. He is currently developing a theory of system wholeness, the R theory, that applies to the causal nature of life and non-living systems. He is working internationally between the United States and India to establish a bridge between Eastern and Western philosophies. Part of his current research now involves the indigenous roots of Vedic philosophy in the Indus or the Saraswati region of South Asia, which may offer precedents for ecological sustainability. He is speaking on the topic Vedic Prehistory, a precedent for holistic meta-science for sustainability. Dr. John J. Kinneman.
I offer my humble pranams at the lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. I also want to dedicate this talk to my good friend, Manu Raval, a great Vedic scholar and historian who passed away at 94 last year. Greetings, everyone, brothers and sisters. I am very honored to be here at the kind invitation of Subramanyam Gorti, the organizing committee, the Sai Trust, and of course, the grace and benevolence of Swami. Now, I don't want to lecture anyone on the Veda. I am not a Vedic expert. I am an environmental scientist trying to improve current science by bringing in a concept of holism from the Vedas. So if I take liberties with interpretation, please forgive me. The Vedas tell us there is a holistic pattern of cosmic order in the universe called Rita or Ritam. The Rig Veda refers to it over 100 times. It's the core of many patterns of creation and knowledge in Vedanta. On the screen, you'll see various diagrams of its basic pattern and related images. I'm diagramming it in a kind of graphical mathematics, showing it as a cycle of four causes, which I call a holon. That's it. A holon is a system that is both part and whole at the same time. It represents the first thing we can know about Brahman, according to the Upanishads. It's a cycle of four natural movements that make or explain the wholeness of anything that exists or can exist. We can say that it is the quintessence of nature. The word quintessence means fifth essence, literally, in the Greek translation. If I have it right, it's the way things happen in interconnected causal cycles. Swami spoke about it often in various forms. In the one interview I had with him, he told me to refer to it as organization. He explained it in many discourses, but usually in terms of the supreme Dharma that applies to us as true human beings. Ritta seems to be a more general concept that applies to everything, even physical reality. Swami described it using his hand to show the five human values. It's also the five major paths of yoga. So maybe you can do this with me, okay? Just hold up your hand for a minute and look at your hand. You have four fingers that are relatively independent, but one thumb that can connect all of them and make it whole. Just as you need all five fingers to grasp to a solid, to solidly grasp a physical object, you need all five qualities to solidly grasp reality. So your fingers represent the four causes in nature, which you see in those whole-on diagrams as a cycle. And the unifying fifth essence, your thumb, Swami named these qualities starting from the little finger, which was Satya, truth, dhyana. Satya, truth, which is also dhyana yoga, the path of meditation on the truth of existence. The next is dharma, right action, which is the aim of karma yoga and seva. The next is shanti, peace, the peace of mind that comes with jnana yoga, true knowledge. Then prema, love, the essence of bhakti yoga. Finally, the thumb, which unifies them all, is ahimsa, which is raja yoga, unifying the four paths. Thus, ahimsa is not a simple concept of nonviolence, but a very deep, holistic one. It's more like the middle way of Zen. It's moving through all the causes harmoniously, passing gracefully through life without causing ripples, like passing over a still pond. It's speaking and acting sweetly and causing no offense. It's the divine being. So Ritta is right there on your own hands. And you have two opposite hands. One direction of the cycle describes how the causes reproduce the world. The other direction is how they explain the world in ascending awareness. So when we do a blessing in a clockwise motion, we're ascending from the world to God. Together they form the self, which is both. And maybe why we put them together to say namaste. I see your divine reality as whole embodiments of love. So these quintessential cycles establish a transcendent identity, the self, which is thus Atman, that may rise to Paramatman or sink to Jivatman. It's our choice. We might also say it's what we call right at any level of experience up to ultimate truth. The Vedas make the astounding proposition that we can understand all of reality as happening in these terms. But I want to tell you two stories now. One is about building this scientific understanding of Ritta into my own framework and models, perhaps, and it is perhaps the greatest of all legacies in human knowing. The other is about how I personally came kicking and screaming into this awareness from my Western background. And by the way, that's also how I first came to India in 2001, kicking and screaming behind my lovely wife, who had become a side devotee. I should have addressed you initially as sisters and brothers, because it is always the feminine that leads us to God. So in my professional life, I made a difficult transition from thinking in terms of physical aspects of reality, I started as a physicist, to looking for holistic answers as an ecosystem scientist. I wanted to answer a basic question: what makes a system whole and sustainable? You see, as a young boy, I lived next to a fantastic oak forest in Baltimore. I was good at anything mechanical, like my father, who was a great engineer. But I also loved nature. I imagined the jungles of Africa where, in fact, I eventually got to work for a while. The forest to me was magical and exciting, and I thought we could just go deeper and deeper into his mysteries and wonders without ever finding another side. But one day the other side came to me behind a team of bulldozers toppling everything, and a housing development sprung up in its place without a tree in sight. We should never forget that nature holds the highest divinity. Even avatars come here to tell us only of our true nature. I believe they're one. One day my brother and I were standing speechless looking at the houses until one of us picked up a rock and we started breaking windows. Well, it was the wrong thing to do, of course, and we got a good beating for it. But I think that was the day I became an ecologist, to find some answers beyond engineering. So later, in 1986, when NASA scientists proposed to study the Earth as a system, I wrote, "To understand a system, we must first become a system." Up to this time, modern science had only looked at separate parts of nature, thinking it was nothing more than interactions. But in ecology, there is a saying that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, which is very much like the transcendent quality of Ritta. I understood that there must be something missing from the standard scientific view, which only calculates the behavior of parts. Today, we're facing a sustainability crisis on many levels. Our way of working with nature is resulting in the destruction of global life support systems. We inject as much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere as nature produces itself, trapping heat that intensifies storms and alters climate patterns in order to escape to space, which it must. We produce as much fixed nitrogen as nature produces, choking ecosystems and producing huge dead zones in the ocean. We've converted half the landscape to human use, a lot of that for terribly inefficient meat production. And we are nearing an extinction of half the species we had only 200 years ago at a rate equal to any in geologic history. Human impact on Earth's life support systems is now equal to nature's impact. But are we equally good managers? Can nature or humanity survive with only half? I'd say we have a problem. But our post-truth society, as it has recently been declared, where belief makes reality without the benefit of facts, denies the problem and thus takes over as our biggest problem. Scientists don't know what to do about it, except that somehow humanity and nature have to get along. Sustainability is now a science in itself, but our present definition of sustainability, now 30 years old, is actually a statement of policy, not science. Like other aspects of the living world, current science can't define what sustainability is, only what it does. Modern science assumes material foundations that can be observed. Vedic science assumed that the cause of existence is the foundation. My first big awakening came when I stumbled onto the work of a mathematical biologist named Robert Rosen. Thank you. As a boy, he had a question. He wanted to know what makes a living system different from a non-living system. You see, just like our definition of sustainability, we have no scientific definition of what life is, only what it does, its behavior. That leaves out the fundamental properties of meaningful nature that would allow us to even discuss the causes of life, or the qualities of life, for that matter. Modern science was based on a machine metaphor, the clockwork universe in which everything is explained in terms of mechanisms. Even postmodern science, after discovering the strangeness of the quantum world, only modified that view by adding uncertainty. Einstein, among others, objected, saying there must be something more fundamental. Many of the early quantum physicists turned to the Veda for answers, but they only took part of its message. Rosen proved mathematically that life itself is not a mechanism, and it's not uncertain. In fact, it produces internal models to direct definite strategies and to resolve uncertainties, as we all do every day. The traditional scientific approach has been a little like the parable of the man who lost his keys at night and was searching for them under a lamppost. Watching him do this for some hours, someone finally asked him why he was looking only under the lamp. His answer was, "That's where I can see." Rosen showed that both content that we can see and context that we can't see, taken together, make a whole system that allows us to understand complex systems and life. But more than that, without the contextual causes, we can't even understand physics correctly. Meanwhile, mathematicians discovered that we can't even explain numbers without these higher causes. Quantitative mathematics, which is the basis for mechanism, is incomplete without assigning meaning to the numbers. Here's another demonstration we can do. We have all been trained in how to add, right? So 1 plus 1 equals 2. If I ask you, what is one mango plus one mango? You're going to say two mangoes. But what if I ask you, what is one mango plus one banana? What's the answer? Well, you might be clever and say two fruit, and you'd be right. Fine. But what is the... Then what is one mango plus one house? See, eventually you have to say two items or two things. In this way, we see the entire world in terms of separate things. And that's the basis for the mechanistic and quantitative view of nature that dominates current science. But what if we add systems that are not separate items? What if I ask you, what is one language plus another language? How many languages are in this hall? I can only guess dozens, maybe 100. but you might answer two, and that might be right, but what if we add French and Spanish? They make Catalan, just like blue and yellow make green. Combining contexts or non-discrete entities is where we get emergence of new order. So when adding whole systems or qualities, 1 plus 1 equals 3. Now, this is not a joke. It's a mathematical fact in combinatorics. And it is actually inscribed on many of the Indus Valley seals as the sequence 1, 3, 7, which is what you get when you add up how many systems there are when you have one thing, two things, or three things. And the thing is, we need both kinds of logic to describe whole reality because they are not reducible. If we do not see the organizing context, then all we can find is chaos and paradox. Another example, a coin has two sides, which are held together by the coin, so it's three. The Isha Upanishad describes this property of natural wholeness very explicitly. If I can take some liberty to substitute the word whole for the more common translation full, it would read like this. That is whole. This is whole. From whole emerges whole. When whole arises from whole, what remains is whole. Context acts like a model. So Rosen called the relation between contents and context the modeling relation. Stephen Hawking now says reality is model dependent, and other physicists now say nature includes information and mind. We're getting there, but slowly, and like me, kicking and screaming. I suggest that Rittam is the mind-body relation that science has had so much difficulty understanding. It's the same as the Vedic relation between the material world and Akash, which is a contextual memory of material existence. But I don't think Rosen knew much, if anything, about the Vedas. So I think it really was an independent discovery in mathematics, truly a brilliant insight in why I consider Rosen the Einstein of biology. He also predicted that biology, when properly done, will be a more fundamental science than physics. And I agree with him. It's very important in the scientific method to have independent discovery and then to test a theory in case studies. So it was a big surprise for me to discover the Vedas, and that the Vedas and Upanishads independently describe the supposedly new idea I had from Rosen's work about mathematical wholeness. Then I was again amazed to find that many symbols of this cosmic order are found in the archaeology of the 5,000-year-old Indus-Saraswati civilizations, which scholars are now recognizing as an indigenous series of Vedic and Proto-Vedic cultures. It was also the most sustainable civilization ever known, according to the evidence, lasting at least 2,000 years by the evidence we have, and probably much longer, according to the Vedas themselves. That it survives today, after relentless marginalization, is the strength of India, a further testament to its sustainability. Previous scholarship gave us people without a philosophy and a philosophy without people. But if we can put them together, there is an amazing story of ancient holism and sustainability buried in history. Scholars lost this knowledge for a lot of reasons. It was partly because that civilization collapsed between 1900 and 600 BC, which dried up the Saraswati River due to climate change, which dried up the Saraswati River and forced it underground. But since then, it's been buried by many other forces in society. Now, ancient holism and modern mechanism go together, because we need both to understand or realize the whole. The problem comes when they are seen as separate and independent from each other. Then they tend to disrupt stable systems and reorganize them into new ones. Sometimes that's a good idea. If we understand what makes sustainability, we might be able to disrupt a pernicious system like 3,000 years of a culture of war that we've had. So going beyond simply a political definition to a scientific definition is extremely important. But still, in this Kali age of dualistic reason, technology is certainly a double-edged sword that requires higher management. It can cause as much suffering and misery in the wrong hands as it can alleviate in the right hands. It led to false hopes of utopian society because it was missing the holistic elements. The way we pursued it through increasing consumption and material growth threatens global sustainability. I think we have to learn how to trade the desire for quantity, which has planetary limits, for a desire for quality, which has no limits. So I'm advocating that we translate this core concept of wholeness into mathematics and current science. Why mathematics, you might ask? Well, because if you want to talk to somebody about something important, you have to speak their language. And mathematics is the language of science. So in conclusion, we need a scientific definition of sustainability, which I think we can get from the Vedas, so that we know how to produce sustainable socio-ecological systems, or in the case of destructive systems that tend to be self-sustaining, like war and corruption, how to disrupt them and transform them into better systems. This also applies to the need to bring humanity to technology. This issue now looms as perhaps our greatest challenge, especially with regard to robotic technology, as Bill Gates and Stephen Hawking have recently warned. So this story has been all about finding wholeness and sustainability for a personal, social, ecological, and technological future of humanity. We have the examples, the theory, and the methods, but it goes beyond personal enlightenment, requiring that we also extend the personal to the social, as Swami so often asked us to do. It cannot be kept only as a private heaven, because we are part of the choices that will determine the future. And while I believe that Swami will always guide us through any new challenges, we must not think that we are small people without a responsibility to contribute. Thank you very much. Om Sai Ram.
With this, we come to an end to this week's Radio Sai Vedam Tutor. In the coming class, we shall continue with the learning of the Mahanarayana Upanishad from where we had left. And it's now time for us to go to the next segment, Radio Sai Bhajan Classroom, hosted by Brother Pishu. Sai Ram, happy listening. Stay tuned to Radio Sai Asia Stream.
Sai Premaye Vedasaramu. విశ్వమంతటికి జీవనాధారము
వేదవాణి సకల జనులకు దారి చూపే దీపము వేదసారమే విశ్వమంతటికి జీవనాధారము
వేదవాణి సకల జనులకు దారి చూపే దీపము
ప్రణవము వేదము సృష్టికి మూలము జనవాహినికిది తెలుపగా ప్రణవము వేదము సృష్టికి మూలము జనవాహినికిది తెలుపగా
సోమకాసురుని సంహరించి ఇల వేద రాసి దరి చేర్చగా సంహరించి ఇల వేద రాసి దరి చేర్చగా
అవతరించినాము స్వామి అవతరించినాము అవతరించినాము స్వామి అవతరించినాము
వేద శాఖలే తోబుట్టువులుగరామునిగా ప్రభవించినావు
వేద శాఖలే తోబుట్టువులుగరామునిగా ప్రభవించినావు
యాగముగాచి ఋషులను బ్రోచి దానవులను పరిమార్చినావు యాగముగాచి ఋషులను బ్రోచి దానవులను పరిమార్చినావు
గోపబాలునిగా అసురులే దృంచి నీ భక్తులే రక్షించినావు
గోపబాలునిగా అసురులే దృంచి నీ భక్తులే రక్షించినావు
Thank you. గీతామృతమును బోధన చేసి వేదసారం అందించినావు వేదసారం అందించినావు ఆనందబాలుడై తన వారి గుర్తింపక్కరలి వచ్చే ఆనందబాలుడై తన వారి గుర్తింపక్కరలి వచ్చే ఆ రామచంద్రుడై
కనబంటులను కనుగొనగవచ్చే
ఆ రామచంద్రుడై కనబంటులను కనుగొనగవచ్చే
వతరించగా సంశయించినారు వేద పురుషని వతరించగా సంశయించినారు
దర్శనముతో భ్రమలు తొలగి నీ దివ్య సన్నిధికి చేరారు దర్శనముతో భ్రమలు తొలగి నీ దివ్య సన్నిధికి చేరారు
వేదనిధికి ప్రశాంతి నిలయం మూలపీఠమై వెలిసింది
నిధికి ప్రశాంతి నిలయం మూలపీఠమై వెలిసింది యజ్ఞయాగముల వేద వైభవం వేగిరేకులై విరిసింది
యజ్ఞయాగముల వేద వైభవం వేగిరేకులై విరిసింది
నీవు నాటిన బంగారు మొలక
సుందర సుమదళ శోభతో మహావృక్షమై పెరిగింది
నీవు నాటిన బంగారు మొలక
సుందర సుమదళ శోభతో మహావృక్షమై పెరిగింది
వేద ఘోష నినదించింది
కులము మతము భాషామరచి జనవాహిని శృతి కలిపారు
కులము మతము భాషామరచి జనవాహిని శృతి కలిపారు
మగవ
వేద స్వరూపమని జగతిని ఒకడే దైవమని
దైవం వేద స్వరూపమని జగతిని ఒకడే దైవమని
విశ్వజనీన వేదమణి అమృతవాణి వినిపించినావు అమృతవాణి వినిపించినావు